Book 3, 1934 to 1936, Chapter 11, 2 May 1934. Last night Matt had arrived home for a month's leave from Egypt, and to Hannah it felt like having a stranger in the house. The month stretched ahead uncomfortably. As she went downstairs behind him, the morning sun was streaming through the stained-glass windows, filling the hall with prisms of coloured light. The post came plopping through the letterbox. Matt stooped to pick it up. Usually Hannah ate her breakfast with Edna in the kitchen. This morning a white cloth had been spread on the table in the dining room. Matt was already pulling out a chair to sit down. In the kitchen there was a smell of burnt toast, and Edna looked harassed because of the change in routine. She'd made both tea and coffee and set them out on a tray. Hannah carried it in. "Letter for you," Matt said from behind the morning paper. She poured him a cup of tea before reaching for the envelope by her plate. "You told Greg I was coming home?"
"Yes, I said you'd see him in the office this morning. You will be going in?"
"Of course." Hannah started to read her letter. "Is he going to pick me up? Run me into the office?"
"I told him there was no need. Hugo sent a car for you to use while you're home."
"You said Dorothy and Franklin would be coming to Mother's for dinner tonight?"
"Yes, she's asked us all."
"Have you seen her new baby?"
Dorothy's family was growing. Hannah never ceased to marvel that Dorothy had taken to motherhood after all. She had given birth to a fourth daughter, Patience, 2 months earlier. "Yes, I went with Hugo. Your mother stayed with her for a week or two. Matt, this letter's from Clarissa Bender. I want you to listen to what she says." With bad grace, he let his newspaper fall back on his plate. Even his hands were deeply tanned. He was scowling at her. "Leo and I have a favor we want to ask," read Hannah. "Our third son, Nicholas, is having difficulty settling to a career. He's very interested in farming, but Leo sees no future in it for him. He's not academic and doesn't want to study further. He rejects most suggestions we make out of hand, but says he would be interested in running a business. Would Matt be good enough to take him under his wing? Find him a job in Evans's, and see if he can make a go of it. We really are at our wits' end with him. We articled him to Leo's cousin, who is a London solicitor, but he threw that over and came home." Matt was frowning. She knew the letter must resurrect bad memories for him. "Lucky for Clarissa you happened to be home."
"I suppose we should feel indebted to her," he said grimly.
"Matt, we owe the Benders any favor they care to ask. This seems little enough."
"I don't like the idea. Nick might remember Dorothy being there."
"He was only 4 years old. He wouldn't have known what was happening, and even if he did, he's unlikely to remember. It was all kept very quiet, and it was 14 years ago."
"But we don't want any rumors."
"Matt, he hardly saw her. Dorothy didn't take to Clary's children. She had to keep them away from the Dower House."
"I don't suppose we can refuse. How old is he now?"
"Clarissa says 18.
"I suppose we can slot him in somewhere. I'll have a word with Greg when I go in this morning."
"She wants him to learn how to run a business."
"Yes, I suppose Greg could arrange that."
"Greg will remember Dorothy's stay at Yarrow. You'll have to warn him not to mention it to Nick."
"Of course I'll do that."
"Nick could stay with us for a few days until he finds lodgings for himself," Hannah said. "It would be easier once he's here. I'll write back and say so."
"I don't want him living here while I'm home," Matt retorted. Hannah took a deep breath.
"Clarissa will want him to start soon."
"There's no desperate hurry. A month won't make much difference. I wish we didn't have to do it at all."
Hannah was cross with him, but it mollified her somewhat to hear him compliment Edna on the eggs and bacon. Once Matt had driven off to the office, the house settled back to something like normality. Hannah started her letter to Clarissa. Matt had made her promise to have as little contact as possible with the Benders. Now all that would change. Nick would know Elizabeth. He'd be able to tell her all about the girl. She felt quite excited at the prospect of his coming. Hannah was relieved when Matt's leave came to an end. She was looking forward to getting back into her old routine again. Weeks ago, she had written to Clarissa, "Why don't you come with Nick and see him into Diggs? I'd love to see you again." Hannah had been disappointed when her friend had replied, but it was a busy time of the year for Leo, and she didn't feel she could desert him at the moment. 2 days after Matt sailed for Alexandria, Nick was due to arrive by train. At Woodside Station, 6 feet of youth straightened up over his suitcases. "It's very kind of you to take me in like this, Mrs. Mortimer." His handshake was bruising. He had soft golden brown eyes and a smile that lit up his whole face. There were still a few boyish freckles across his nose. Hannah thought him recognizably like Clarissa. She felt pleased to have him and inquired about his parents. They were both well. Nick chattered on, telling her Jonathan was now in a veterinary practice in Yorkshire and waiting for an opportunity to move nearer to home. Hal was working as a houseman in a London hospital, and Lucy was in a boarding school in Colwyn Bay. He hadn't seen much of any of them recently. Hannah wanted news of Elizabeth, but she decided to wait for the right opportunity to ask, in case he should wonder why. She showed him to the room prepared for his use and tried to make him feel welcome. "I've asked Greg to call in to meet you on his way home." Greg came, and they seemed to get on amicably. Nick was asking all sorts of questions about Evans's. She thought he sounded interested, and he seemed to know a good deal about Matt's business already. When Greg went, Nick began talking about Yarrow. She liked his friendly manner, and thought Clarissa should be proud of him. They were in the dining room having supper when he said, "Do you remember Lizzie O'Malley?" "Yes." She guessed immediately that he knew more of Dorothy's business than she'd supposed. "Mother asked me to be sure to tell you about her." Hannah was disconcerted. "Has something happened?" "Maisie's arranging for her to go to a boarding house in Crewe as a scullery maid." Her stomach muscles contracted in alarm. "Good gracious! Already?" "She'll be 14 in September. All Maisie's children go into service after their 14th birthday. She has so many, she can't keep them all at home, and anyway, they have to earn their own living." "But as a scullery maid?" "Peggy, her own daughter, has been doing the job for 2 years. She's to be promoted to housemaid or something, and Maisie's planning to send Lizzie to take her place. She thinks it's a good opportunity, and having Peggy there should make it easier for Lizzie." She thought Nick was talking too quickly. "Mother thought you'd want to know. Obviously, she couldn't just let it happen." His eyes met Hannah's apologetically, as though afraid his mother had presumed too much. Oh, God, why had she not thought of this? Hannah crashed her knife and fork down on her plate. She'd just kept sending the pittance for her keep, expecting things to stay the same forever. Elizabeth was growing up, and she hadn't considered what that would mean. "Surely that's not what she wants, to be a scullery maid." "She accepts it. She doesn't expect to have any choice. It's already happened to Peggy, you see." Hannah felt cold with shock. "But Elizabeth could do better for herself." "She's quick to pick things up, very quick." Nick was frowning in concentration. "Bright as a button. I can see her running that boarding house before very long." Not a great future for a Mortimer, Hannah thought bitterly. She blamed herself. Not much of a life for the girl. What a fool she'd been. All those years ago, she'd let Matt persuade her to forget Lizzie. She should have done much more. "I hate to think of Lizzie having a life of drudgery," Nick went on earnestly. He was making her feel even more guilty. She tried to think. "What would be the best thing for her? How can we help her?" "A few more years at school would be the best thing," Nick answered briskly. "Boarding school." Hannah looked at him with fresh eyes. "Is that what your mother says?" "It's what I say, but she agrees." Hannah wondered why she hadn't thought of that years ago. It would have got Lizzie away from Maisie O'Malley and given her a decent education. At the very least, she and Matt should have seen to that. She warmed towards Nick, pleased that he seemed to like the girl. She could pay the fees herself. Matt was generous with her dress allowance and never questioned what she spent on the house. He need never know, though she didn't think he'd object to boarding school. She wrote to Clarissa the same evening, and since she'd had more experience of boarding schools, asked her opinion as to which one they should approach. "What about Lucy's school?" she suggested. Clarissa wrote back. "Do come and see us. We need to discuss this and talk it over with Lizzie. I still miss the gossipy sessions we used to have, and a few days in the country would do you good. I don't think Lucy's school would be the best choice for Lizzie. She and Lucy don't get on too well. Oddly enough, Nick seems to have more in common with her. I've sent for prospectuses from two different ones. If you come, we could arrange to go and see them together. Of course, Lizzie will want to know why you're willing to go to this trouble and expense for her. You'd better have your explanation ready before we do anything further." The wisdom of that made Hannah think again. Dorothy wouldn't want her to know. Apart from natural embarrassment, she'd kept Franklin Flower in ignorance, and Lizzie now had four half-sisters. Ridiculous to go to such lengths to cover up 14 years ago, and now broadcast it. If she told Lizzie the truth, there was no knowing how far she'd spread it. She might even want to see her mother. Sir Hugo Mortimer's family was always news, and this could still seriously embarrass them all. Matt would be furious with her if she let the story out now. It could finish off her own marriage, as well as Dorothy's. She'd wasted far too much time already. Hannah decided she would accept Clarissa's invitation. Joey's 14th birthday had come at the end of April. As he had no job to go to, he was continuing to go to school until he had, or until school broke up for the summer holidays. Lizzie was uneasy. Change was obviously coming, and not knowing what it would bring made it harder to bear. She knew it was weighing on Joey's mind, too, though he pretended it did not. It made her wonder if all the talk of running away was just bravado, and in the end he'd go to a farm somewhere, and she'd join Peggy in crew. "We'll never see each other again if we let that happen," he'd said. "Our Peg has only been home once, and it's getting on for 2 years since she went. She's coming for a week in August. When you're free to come home, you can guarantee it'll be harvest time, and I won't be able to." They were walking home from school together a few weeks later. They'd reached the great iron gates of Yarrow Hall Farm, and the gatehouse came into view. Lizzie recognized the dog circling the front door and snatched at Joey's arm. "Mr. Bender's here," she breathed. "Do you think he's come to take you on?" She saw his newly prominent Adam's apple move as he swallowed. Relief flickered and died in his lopsided eyes. "He's probably come to see my dad. It was getting on for 2 years since Seamus had broken his leg, but he still used a stick to walk to the Madryn Arms. He had worked since, but never for more than a month or two at a time. Maisie had been cleaning for the doctor's relatives in the Dower House for over a year now, just a few hours each morning to add to their income. Her employers had given her an old couch. All last week Seamus had taken time off work to lie on it. He says his leg aches if he stands on it for long, and farm works hard. You know him. Any excuse, he'll not want to hurry back." Joey took to his heels and burst into the living room. Lizzie followed more slowly, allowing herself to hope. "There you are." Leo Bender was standing with his back to the empty grate. He beamed at Joey. "Mr. Bender's come to take you on." His mother was all smiles. There was relief in her dark eyes, too. "Not permanently, I'm afraid, Joey. I can't do that. But with the hay harvest almost on us, and your father still not fit to work, I'd like you to come as casual labour for a few weeks." "Yes, Mr. Bender, that'll be a great help." Relief and joy exploded inside Lizzie's head. It put off the need for Joey to go elsewhere. "If you get an offer of a permanent place, then of course you must take it." The next day, Miss Jones, the teacher at Penaclip School, gave him his leaving reference. "It's not blowing, Joey, but I do my best to say something good about every child who passes through my school." After she'd shaken his hand and wished him well for the future, and he'd said goodbye to his fellow pupils, he and Lizzie walked home from school together for the last time. "Gives you a chance to finish school, and me a chance to save some money," Joey whispered afterwards. "Some hope of that," she retorted. "Your mum will have it all off you." "No, she won't." Joey's lips were set in a firm line. "She needn't think I'm working instead of me dad. I'm not handing it all over." A week or two later, as Lizzie walked into the village on her way to school, she found housewives standing on their doorsteps gossiping instead of getting started on the day's work. They told her the village post office had been broken into during the night and several days' takings stolen. Penaclip was a place where doors were always left open. Theft was unheard of in the village. Only the postmaster and the publican bothered to lock their doors at night, and that hadn't stopped the thief. Lizzie had a cold feeling in the pit of her stomach and wondered whether Seamus could be responsible. She and Joey whispered about it at bedtime. Seamus seemed to have plenty of pipe tobacco in the following days, and Maisie had butterscotch. They came to the conclusion it was more than likely. Thursdays were the days Lizzie dreaded now. A busy cattle market was held in Penaclip every Thursday, and Seamus went regularly, hoping he'd hear of a farmer wanting to hire a young boy. Farming remained depressed, but there was still a demand for school leavers in the district. They were strong, and would work for a lower wage than their more experienced fathers. When she came home from school on Thursdays, Lizzie expected to hear Seamus had succeeded. For 3 weeks on the run, she felt reprieved when she found he had not. Now, on the fourth, as soon as she closed the living room door behind her, she sensed the change. All the younger O'Malleys had arrived home before her, and the atmosphere was unmistakably charged. "You've found a place for Joey?" She could hardly get the words out. "No." Auntie Maisie's face was flushed. She was pacing round the small room. "And hardly likely to after this." Uncle Seamus was lying on the couch, his bad leg stretched out in front of him. He looked spent, but roused himself sufficiently to spit out, "They won't all have heard, so they won't. They come to market from miles around."
"Heard what?" Lizzie moistened her lips. "What's happened?"
"You know the post office was broken into last week?" Maisie's eyes were round with horror. Lizzie nodded. "Constable Watkins came here this morning. Dad's been down at the station all day. He's been charged." Lizzie's scalp crawled with horror. Seamus was good at talking his way out of trouble. Both she and Joey had expected him to get away with this, even if he was guilty. He had a reputation for sailing close to the wind, but he'd never been in trouble with the police before.
"He searched the whole place, looked in all my drawers, and yours too."
Maisie was trying to sound indignant, but her sly smile betrayed her. "But he found nothing."
"Not a bloody penny of it," Seamus said victoriously.
"I'm hungry," little Flora complained.
Maisie had been too fraught all day to think of meals.
"I'll cook," Lizzie said,
but when she went to the larder it was almost empty. Seamus gave no sign that he had money. She found it hard to believe he'd eat bread and treacle for his supper if he had. Afterwards she went up to see Tatty, who let her make boiled bacon sandwiches for the children. She kept one for Joey when he came home, though he was now fed with the other farm boys. As he stood eating it at their bedroom window, he said,
"He's hidden the money somewhere. I'll bet my bottom dollar. Buried it, perhaps?"
"Not in the garden," Lizzie said. "Soil hasn't been disturbed."
They looked down on it. Months ago cabbages had been planted, but now they could hardly be seen for weeds.
"Under the water butt?" Joey hazarded. "Under something."
"There's a good side to this," Lizzie murmured, leaning her forehead against the cool glass. "Your mother's right. Who'll want to hire you now? If your father's proved to be a thief, they won't want you in case it turns out you've inherited his light fingers."
Joey grinned. "I'm going to sell my ferret all the same. If I have to leave, I might as well have the few bob for it.
might need it.
But the fun had gone out of everything. Already they saw very little of each other. Joey was working until 9 or 10 at night in the hay harvest. He wasn't used to such hard work, and was too exhausted to do anything but sleep when he came home. The news came, just as Lizzie had expected, on a Thursday afternoon. She'd walked home from school with the 3 younger O'Malleys. Seamus was rubbing his hands with satisfaction.
"Found a place for our Joey, I have."
Lizzie had been untying Flora's bonnet. She straightened up, feeling as though the bottom had dropped out of her world. "Where?"
"A farm called Pandy, near Brithdir, 18 miles or so from here, and higher in the hills."
Lizzie's spirits fell. 18 miles was too far to walk. "They want him to start on the 1st of July. Maisie looked unusually cheerful. "They'll be cutting their hay in the first spell of good weather after that." Lizzie was trembling. There was only one thing she could do. She ran straight up to the farm to tell Joey. She found him forking hay from the top of the cart to the top of the barn.
"We've nearly finished. Last load, thank God."
His 3 fellow labourers were putting on a spurt now the end of the job was in sight.
"I hate the hay."
Joey had split his shirt up the back. His clothes were in rags. The huge shire horse between the shafts shuffled restlessly, flicking its tail across its back to remove flies. When Lizzie called the bad news up to him, his fellow workers jeered.
"Rotten luck, Joey. Who'd want to go through another bloody hay harvest this year? It'd kill me."
He straightened up on his pike, his face running with perspiration. For the first time, Lizzie sensed his determination. She had the feeling he didn't intend to go quietly to Pandy. She walked home slowly, knowing big changes were on them now. Joey came home earlier than usual, as soon as milking finished.
"Come for a walk," he said quietly,
but threw himself down on the grass as soon as they'd put a few trees between them and the gatehouse. Lizzie sat with her back against an old oak.
"This is it," he said. "No putting it off any longer. I can pack your things along with mine. Everyone will think I'm going to Pandy. You'll say you're coming to the station to see me off, and we'll both go to Birkenhead. How's that?"
"They'll expect me to go to school."
1st of July is a Sunday, and I've got to be there the night before. But in luck, we'll be leaving on a Saturday."
"Why Birkenhead?"
"Isn't that what you want? Nick says it's where your mother is."
Her stomach was churning with apprehension.
"Yes, where Nick is, too."
"We'll be all right."
"Joey, you'll have to get a job. Look how long it's taken here, and it could take longer there. How will we manage?"
"Trust me, Lizzie, we'll manage. I'm going to make us rich."
She was staring at him in disbelief, both hands pressing against her mouth.
"I've got palpitations, just thinking about it."
"I know I can do it, but it might take a little time."
She laughed then. She mustn't doubt Joey. He'd have it all worked out. Joey went ahead with his preparations. Mrs. Bender gave him a Sunday suit that Nick had grown out of and a blanket for his bed. The farm boys at Pandy slept over the stable, and she'd heard he might need extra bedding. Someone gave Maisie an old suitcase. One of the locks had broken, but it could be tied with string and was easier to carry than a parcel. Lizzie sorted through her own clothes and washed what she wanted to take. Joey wanted to pack them in his case, but she was afraid Maisie might see them there. She said they must stay in her drawer until the last moment. She was edgy and anxious. 4 miles beyond Penaclip was a somewhat larger village called Talabont. She and Joey walked there to consult timetables at the railway station. His mother had given him money to buy his ticket to the farm. He brought it home to show her and announced that he was going to catch the afternoon train.
"We can catch a train in the opposite direction an hour later and change to the Birkenhead train at Ruabon. It's all working out," he pointed out to Lizzie.
She woke early on Saturday morning in a lather of apprehension.
"Come on, get up," Joey was whispering. "Be quiet. We don't want to wake the others."
Joey said they must be up first so they could cut jam sandwiches without anyone knowing. It would look suspicious, he thought, if he asked for food to take on an 18-mile journey. Lizzie shivered as she pulled on her clothes and crept downstairs behind Joey. As soon as the fire burned up enough, she put the half-dozen eggs Joey had collected from the henhouse last night in a pan to boil hard, all the time listening for sounds from the floor above. Joey seemed calm as he packed the food into the pockets of a Macintosh that had once belonged to Nick. Lizzie couldn't believe it was going to be as easy as he said it was. During the morning, she went up to the farm. Tatty had promised to make a cake for Joey to take with him. She showed Lizzie the fruit cake, already in a tin. Clarissa Bender was in the kitchen, too, making fairy cakes. She packed as many of her first batch round the fruit cake as the tin would take.
"Thank you," Lizzie said. "Joey's always hungry these days. He'll be pleased with these."
"He's beginning to grow at last," Tatty smiled. "He's broadened out over the last few months."
"I expect you'll miss him." Mrs. Bender was being kind. Lizzie felt her heart jerk faster. She couldn't talk about missing him when she meant to go too. She said quickly,
"How's Nick? Does he like his new job?"
"I think so. We probably miss him more than he misses us. He says the changes aren't all for the better, but he's probably settling down."
"I'd like to write to him." Lizzie could feel herself blushing. "Would you mind?"
"I'll give you his address." Mrs. Bender smiled. "He'd probably like to hear from you. Anyway, Lizzie, you'll be going yourself soon."
"Yes."
She tried to ignore her pounding heart. "Sooner than anyone supposed." Maisie cooked them a good dinner, though Lizzie could hardly get hers down. Then the younger boys clamoured to walk to the station with Joey to see him off.
"Make them stay home, ma'am," Joey said as he kissed her goodbye. "Lizzie will come and help me carry my things. I'd rather it was just her. You know how me and Lizzie are. We don't want them all hanging round us. It'll be hard to say goodbye to her." With her heart in her throat, Lizzie got herself ready and took one last look round the room she'd slept in all her life. Maisie was at the bottom of the stairs.
"You won't need that big coat today, Lizzie," she said. "You'll be too hot."
Lizzie opened her mouth in consternation, unable to speak. She couldn't possibly go without a coat.
"Mr. Bender said the glass was falling." Joey came to her aid, putting a hand on her sleeve and drawing her through the front door.
"He says the weather's breaking. It's going to rain and get much cooler."
At last they were heading through the ornate gates of Yarrow Hall.
Lizzie turned to wave for the last time. As they walked through Penner Clip, several people wished Joey well and said goodbye. The postmaster's wife ran into the shop to get him a few boiled sweets to suck on the journey.
"Nice of her, considering what your dad's done," Lizzie said.
Miss Jones, the schoolmistress, waved from the schoolhouse window. It was a warm, sunny afternoon, and the walk to the station seemed long. Lizzie had to take off her coat and carry that, too.
"We should be grateful it's a long way," Joey reminded her. "We don't want people waiting on the platform to see us off. With luck, nobody we know will be there to see us getting on the wrong train."
Talabont was a country halt with just two platforms, one used for trains going up the line, the other down. They watched the up train come through and two passengers get on.
"Burned my boats now," Joey said as it pulled out.
Then he gave Lizzie some money and steered her to the booking office to buy a ticket to Birkenhead.
"What about you?"
"I've already got a ticket. No point in throwing our money about."
"Are we going to have enough?"
Lizzie couldn't stop her anxiety showing.
"I mean, we'll have to eat."
"We'll be able to eat. I didn't want to tell you until we'd left home, but I found the money Dad hid."
"You mean from the post office?"
She only dared whisper the words after she'd made sure nobody else was within hearing.
"He buried it in a tobacco tin under the ferret cage. I searched the shed. I knew it had to be outside, or Constable Watkins would have found it. I was afraid he'd hidden it in a hollow tree somewhere, or down a deserted rabbit burrow. That would have meant I couldn't have it,
but someone might have come across it by accident.
How much?
They crossed the bridge to the down platform. There were benches in the sun and a wooden shelter with seats inside. Lizzie felt conspicuous, and Joey didn't want to be recognized now. They went behind the shelter where they were less likely to be seen, but there was only one person about, and he was a railway employee, raking the flower beds back to perfection.
"Dad only got £8.10," Joey said.
"Well, that's all he's got left. Hardly enough, considering it put the police on his back, and he's got to go to court over it."
"But the ferret cage went last week. Weren't you afraid he'd check whether the money was still there?"
"I left it there till this morning. I cleaned out the cage before it went and dumped all the muck and straw on top. I was banking on him leaving it where it was until the whole business blows over. After all, he wouldn't want to spend money he couldn't account for now."
Lizzie giggled nervously.
"I'd love to see his face when he finds it's gone."
"I'd rather not. He owes us, Lizzie, and it'll give us a start."
"But we have to be careful with it all the same."
"Here's what we'll do if the ticket inspector comes round."
It only served to put her on tenterhooks.
"I wish we'd bought two tickets. I wish your dad had got away with hundreds, and we didn't have to do this."
"Just be ready to slip me the ticket. That's all you have to do."
The hour they had to wait dragged, but at last other people began to gather on the station. Lizzie was terrified they'd see someone they knew. Joey was biting his nails and every few minutes craning his neck in the hope of seeing the first plumes of smoke down the valley as the train approached. It came at last, sliding to a standstill in the station in a whoosh of escaping steam. She'd never been on a train before, but Joey had. Once Dr. Moore had arranged for him to see a specialist in Liverpool Hospital, Seamus had taken him. Lizzie was full of relief when they were on their way at last. The risk-taking began to be exciting. The sensation of speed was wonderful. She felt truly alive. Joey's eyes sparkled. Smuts were flying past the window, and the taste of smoke was on Lizzie's tongue. She could see smoke trailing back as the engine curved round the valley. They changed to the main line train. There were more passengers on this, and they couldn't get a carriage to themselves. An elderly man was reading the Manchester Guardian in one window seat. Opposite him, a young mother nursed a shawl-wrapped baby on her lap and watched over a toddler who slept on the seat beside her.
"The ticket inspector's coming," Joey was whispering out of the corner of his mouth.
Suddenly Lizzie was stiff with nerves. From further up the corridor she heard the call,
"Tickets, please!"
"You stay here. I'll move up the train. Be ready to slip me the ticket when I come back."
Lizzie took the ticket from her pocket in readiness. She could see her hand shaking slightly as she waited.